to CJLO News. A research lab at Concordia is using the popular video game Minecraft to study solar power resource management. The Lab for Technoculture, Art and Games, or TAG, is Canada's largest research center dedicated to the study of games. They study how video games and board games can affect our culture, what we can learn through games, and what games teach us about society. TAG recently launched a server, or online world, in the creative video game Minecraft. But they made some pretty big modifications in hopes of learning how people interact with solar power resource management.
Early on, we thought about sort of solar-powered gaming, and then realized that it wasn't that difficult to create a Minecraft server, build a Minecraft server, and connect it to actual solar power, and then think about what that might mean. And then we went one step further and said, why don't we not just put a Minecraft server, not just power a Minecraft server with a solar panel, but why don't we like make that part of the game itself?
That was Bart Simon, the director for the Milieu Institute for Arts, Culture, and Technology, which oversees TAG. Simon explains that the computer powering this Minecraft server literally runs on direct solar power, meaning when the sun isn't out for a while, the game shuts down.
We want to draw attention to, if you like, the carbon costs of computing, the hidden energy costs of playing video games. So one of the earliest bits of data, which we think is really interesting, of course, is when you have a server and nobody's playing, you're still drawing power, right, for this virtual world, which is kind of just existing in principle, but nobody's there. So you're actually consuming power, which has a carbon kind of implication.
Simon and the TAG team hope this serves as a social experiment. But it's not just the real-life solar power that makes this an experiment. Their modified version of Minecraft is called Sunblock, and it tells players how much energy they are using with their playstyle.
The whole point about the solar server is the way you play will affect the consumption, the power consumption of the server. So the faster you go, the more the CPU is working, the more power you're consuming. And what that means from a player standpoint is if you fly around, you're basically using up the power that other people might want to have to be able to play their game. So now we have a great social experiment, right? How do you share a collective resource in a way which respects everybody's right to play, if you like, or desire to play?
Within Sunblock is a game called Gaia's Riddle, where players have to survive a climate catastrophe together, complete with extreme weather. The research is in its early stages, but the game is playable and online. For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes. My father told me to fight.
We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. And what a show we have for you guys today. The Stanley Cup playoffs are down to the final four teams, and those series are already moving along. We'll get into that. Same with the NBA. We're in the conference finals. We'll get into that. Big race in Formula One over the weekend. Major League Baseball heating up. The French Open starting today. Man, what a week in sports we have in store, and we're going to get into it over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show. If you're new to the program, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. The Tommy John Show is on it. And if you missed the show, you can go check it up on our Instagram following the program. So we'll start off with the National Hockey League, and we're down to four teams since we did our last show. And it's Florida, Carolina in the East, Edmonton and Dallas in the West. And that Carolina-Florida series, I want to say it's over because it's not over until it's over. But it's over, it feels like. 3-0 lead for the Florida Panthers in that series. And if you look at the scores in those series, it's just demolition jobs. 5-2 in Game 1, 5-0 in Game 2. Game 3, it was tied going to the third period. And then the Florida Panthers laid it on. They scored 5 goals in the third period, and they beat the Carolina Hurricanes 6-2. And now hold a commanding 3-0 lead, and tonight they will look to sweep the Carolina Hurricanes at home and advance to their third straight Stanley Cup final. They won last year. 2 years ago, they lost to Vegas, but they were banged up. But this would be, with a win tonight, or a win in the next four games, would send the Florida Panthers back to the Stanley Cup Final. And if you look at this team, they're struggling a bit at the end of the year, adding in new pieces. They brought in Seth Jones. Marchand was coming off an injury. They tried inserting him into the lineup. They weren't playing great. Don't have home ice advantage against Toronto. Don't have play home ice advantage here against Carolina. I don't even think they had home ice advantage against Tampa Bay. They did not. So they have not had home ice advantage this whole postseason, and it has not mattered for the Florida Panthers. It does not make a difference to them. They're playing awesome. Brad Marchand looks incredible. Seth Jones has been unbelievable. And then a worrying sign for the rest of the NHL, or I guess the three teams left, Barkov's getting going. Kachuk's starting to look better. Sam Bennett, that's a scary sight. Because earlier in the postseason, it was that third line with Lindell, Marchand, Verhaeghe that were just killing teams. Killing them. And Kachuk was clearly not healthy, coming off an injury. He's not 100%. Barkov was doing great as a two-way player, but the offensive game wasn't totally there. He had 3 points on Saturday night. 2 goals and an assist. He's heating up. Kachuk looks much better. Not even close to what he looked like against Tampa Bay and Toronto. He's starting to pick it up. And you look at that defense. They are playing some great hockey. Bobrovsky looks comfortable. This Mikkola guy is unbelievable. So if Florida's going to be a tough out for whoever they play, whether it's Dallas or Edmonton, I'm sorry, Carolina, you're down 3-0. I'm looking ahead. Dallas or Edmonton, it's going to be a tough matchup. It really, really is. And the longer this series goes between Dallas and Edmonton, Florida's going to love it. It's going to give Kachuk more time to be healthy. Marchand's an older player, gives him more time to rest. Gotta remember, Florida's played a ton of hockey in the last 3 years. So any rest they can get, I think, will do them wonders. If we look to the Western Conference, I got to tell you, I've never seen a turnaround quite like this in a postseason run. Heading into the playoffs, Edmonton was on no one's radar. They weren't. I'm sorry. I know they had McDavid and Draisaitl, and they went to the finals last year, but all the experts loved LA in that series. This is the year LA is going to knock them off. And through 2 games, it looked like that was going to happen. They were the much better team. But since Game 3 of that LA series in round one, Edmonton has hit a gear and they have not slowed down, and they have continually gotten better. They got better from Game 3 to Game 4, to Game 5 to Game 6 in that LA series. Against Vegas, they just hit the ground running and got better and better and better. And even in that Dallas series, in this Dallas series, they were the better team for two-thirds of that hockey game. The first two periods, Edmonton were miles better than Dallas. What happened? They let that game slip. Okay, no problem. They were better in Game 2, and apart from that second period yesterday, they were miles better than Dallas. Dallas was playing well in that second period, and Stuart Skinner, who we have killed on this program, played well. He kept them in the game, made some timely stops, and I know he's had shutouts in the playoffs. He either has a shutout or he allows six goals. He only allowed one yesterday, but that was probably his best playoff performance of this postseason run. But we have to give Edmonton credit, and the reason why I prefer this Oilers team to the one that made the finals last year, just the depth. They're getting depth scoring. And we've talked about it on this program for weeks since they won against LA. We talked about it during that Vegas series. We've talked about the end of the LA series. It's not just the McDavid and Draisaitl show, which they are the leading point getters in the playoffs, but they're the two best players on the planet. Connor Brown stepping up. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins looks fantastic. Zach Hyman is just hammering guys. Not just goal scoring, hitting people, being physical. Evander Kane's been awesome. This is not the Oilers of last year where it's McDavid and Draisaitl putting the team on their back and saying, hey guys, let's give it a run here. John Klingberg's been good. Evan Bouchard has returned to the Evan Bouchard of last year. Brett Kulak's been nice. And then if they get past Dallas in this series and go to the final, you like to think they're going to let Ekholm try and play. And if you add Matthias Ekholm to this back end, man, they're going to be a much better hockey team. But give them credit. Give Edmonton credit. They were on no one's radar to make it back to the Cup final this year. They were too banged up, weren't playing well. Chris Knobloch was saying some strange things at the podium. Stuff, usually a calm, reserved guy, if he was saying comments that kind of had people scratching their heads. But let's be honest, they have played nearly flawless hockey since Game 3 of that LA series. Yes, they let that game slip with, what, point something seconds left against Vegas. And yes, they had a terrible third period against the Dallas Stars in Game 1. And if they didn't have that period, they'd be up 3-0. We could be looking at two sweeps in the conference final. You think about it, Edmonton, this is a much scarier Edmonton team. Connor Brown's been awesome. It's just a much better hockey team. Are there big names? No. Like, yeah, Evander Kane, Nugent Hopkins, Hyman, McDavid, yeah. But Connor Brown's not a big name. Trent Frederick, they acquired from the Bruins. He looks great. He's blocking shots at the end of games. How about Jake Walman? Seriously, Kasperi Kapanen. Perry's 100 years old. These are the guys who are showing up and helping out in Edmonton. And not to mention, McDavid played phenomenal yesterday. And Draisaitl, who was not playing well, let's be honest, at the start of that Vegas series, has really turned his game around. So if McDavid's firing on all cylinders, and Draisaitl's firing on all cylinders, and then you have the second and third lines contributing, and yes, they can defend, like McDavid has said in every press conference. Stuart Skinner, who played well, who I'm still is the weak point of the hockey team, they defend well in front of him. And McDavid has said that constantly. We can defend. We can defend. Here was Connor McDavid yesterday. It was a weird start time, 3 o'clock, so it was like an afternoon, early afternoon game in Edmonton. Here's his thoughts on their, I don't want to say flawless because the second period got a bit messy, but on their dominant win yesterday afternoon in Edmonton.
It helps you get through a couple periods. Just a thought on what Skinner gave you guys tonight.
Yeah, I thought we were fortunate to be up, after 40, but I thought Stu did a great job. You know, we played really solid in front of him in game two and not so solid tonight, and gave us a chance to get our legs into it and give us a chance to win.
You got everybody's got to block shots. Everybody's got a hit. The guy next to you has got most hits per game in the last 20 plus years in the NHL playoffs. I know he had the 2 goals and 3 points, but just the relentlessness of what Zach's bringing to your group right now.
Yeah, it's impressive to watch. Amazing to watch, you know. And I get obviously a front row seat to it, you know, every night. So he's a wrecking ball out there right now. Everybody's buying in though, and doing things that maybe not, you know, the most comfortable things, or the things that they're not the most used to doing. And obviously he's leading the way that way.
Left side, second row, Jason.
Zach, your goal in the Nugent Hopkins pass, it been a little bit of a tire fire prior to that in the own zone. What did you see on that play to get so wide open? And maybe talk just about the pass from Nuge that sprung you.
Yeah, I mean, kind of probably that play sums up the game, I guess. It wasn't the cleanest game. They had a couple looks before Stu bailed us out. We turned it over a couple times, and then it was a break and was able to get behind the D, and Nuge made an amazing pass, and then had a lot of time.
So that was Connor McDavid and Zach Hyman following a 6-1 win. And it was right. It was dicey in that second period. Watching that second period, I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And Skinner, to his credit, Stuart Skinner made big saves. He really did. And I wasn't saying Pickard was a better goalie than him, but I said Pickard was giving the Oilers timely saves. He would still let in 3 or 4 goals, but especially in that Vegas series, he was giving them just timely stops. Like when you're up one, you're on the road, the home team's pressing, and you just need one stop to like calm things down, get new players on the ice. Maybe you have exhausted defenders and forwards. Just make a stop and get a whistle. And nothing against Stuart Skinner. For the large part of his career in the postseason, he just could not give him the timely stop. And for some reason, Pickard, who's been a backup his whole career, would just give him timely stops. And that's all the Oilers needed. The Oilers, as much as they'd like to have prime Carey Price between the pipes, they don't need stellar goaltending. They're going to score goals. They're going to defend well. They just need timely stops. And to Stuart Skinner's credit, he gave him timely stops in the second period. Now, game one, third period, I don't know what the hell happened to him. I know there's 100 power plays and Dallas took advantage, but he could not give him a stop. And then they defended a bit better in game two. And then yesterday when it broke down, he made the big saves. So am I fully sold on Stuart Skinner? Heck no. I've seen this too many times. I saw it last year. He's just going to have his blow-up games. He's going to let in 6 goals, or he's going to have a shutout or a 1-goal outing. There's no in-between. There's no in-between. But if I'm Edmonton, I'm feeling really good. I'm at home. Up 2-1. If I take this game at home, you go back to Dallas up 3-1. All the pressure on the Stars. I'm telling you, Edmonton's in a good spot. And that would set up a rematch. As good as it was last year with Florida going up 3-0 and Edmonton fighting all the way back. As good as that series was last year, I think the teams are better this year, if possible. I think Edmonton's a deeper team and they're getting more help from their bottom six and their second line. They're defending better. And I think Florida, adding Marchand, Seth Jones, they're probably better too. Now, Tkachuk's health is still concerning, but I think he looked miles better in game three than he has the rest of the postseason, which is a good sign. But if that's the series we get, and it looks like it's heading in that direction, don't want to count out Dallas at all. They're still very much in this series. But that would be some hockey series. It really would. But if you look at if you do a quick preview, would you trust Bobrovsky or Stuart Skinner? Like that's a big factor. Bobrovsky's been to that'd be his third Stanley Cup final. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's won several Vezinas. And the year that they went to the finals in 2023, I guess, he was superb. They were talking about him just running away with the Conn Smythe. So, look out for Florida, because they're not an easy out. And Edmonton, if they play like this, they're going to be right there as well. I it's a 50-50 series to me. I maybe give the slight edge to Florida. I think they got more depth on the back end, and that third line has been the best line in hockey for the last 2 months. So I'd give them the edge. But if you have McDavid and Draisaitl playing at their highest level, and then you have the surrounding cast helping, it's going to be an all-time series. It really is. And again, Dallas is still in this. And I can tell Jason Robertson isn't fully healthy. Rantanen's cooled off a bit. Roope Hintz, okay. But they're not out of the series. They're not. Don't count out the Dallas Stars. But as we sit here right now, up 2-1 with a home game on Tuesday to go up 3-1, Edmonton's in a very good spot. And you cannot be in a better spot than the Florida Panthers right now, who look to sweep the Hurricanes tonight. Quickly to the National Basketball Association. And we went from two series that were heading for sweeps into a good series on both the West and Eastern fronts. You look at the Eastern Conference. We'll start off with the Knicks, who, man, have they been a roller coaster. They get past the Celtics. The city of New York is alive. People are climbing lampposts, riding the streets, just making a conference final. Making a conference final. They're doing this. They have the big lead in game one. They let that slip away. Halliburton ties it at the end, and they win in overtime. Indiana up 1-0. Then Siakam goes crazy in game two. They take the first two games in New York. And then yesterday, with a 20-point lead, the Pacers are thinking, we're going to sweep the Knicks. We're going to the finals. Then Karl-Anthony Towns went crazy. The Knicks stepped up. They answered the call and fought back and won Game 3. And it kind of feels like this is where the series should be at, because the Knicks were the better team in Game 1, and I thought the Pacers were the better team yesterday in Game 3, and the results go the other way. So we're pretty much where we're supposed to be. Indiana up 2-1. But this series was heading, when they were up 20 points, like, oh my God, the Knicks are going to get swept. And Indiana doesn't really lose at home. That's not what they do. But we've seen them bounce back from poor performances. We saw it against the Cavs. We've seen it in playoff performances, especially last year against the Knicks. With that series, went 7 games. Indiana bounced back several times. This is a resilient group. Rick Carlisle is one of the best coaches in the NBA. And they've got just a great rotation of players. Halliburton's an all-star caliber player. Siakam's an all-star caliber player. Miles Turner's great. I really like Aaron Nesmith. He didn't play too well the other night, but he can get hot from three. So they got a lot of players who can help out. They really do. But if you're the New York Knicks, you needed help with Jalen Brunson, and you got it yesterday with Karl-Anthony Towns, who went for 24 and 15. He was awesome. So we got a series. We got a series out in the Eastern Conference. If we head to the Western Conference, Oklahoma City looked like they were going to win every game by 100 points. 114-88 game one, 118-103, and it wasn't that close in game two. I was fearing the same thing going into game three. I'm like, if Oklahoma City get this one, this series is over. And what does Minnesota do? They win by 42 points. 42. Anthony Edwards was spectacular. Julius Randle was fantastic. And they were getting help from Alexander Walker, from Terrence Shannon Jr. They got help from McDaniels. They got help from Naz Reid. It wasn't just Anthony Edwards, even though he did drop 30. But the rest of the crew showed up. And if you're Oklahoma City, you're not freaking out too much. It's one game. But it was just a disaster. Everything that could go wrong went wrong for the Oklahoma City Thunder in Game 3. So from two series that looked like we were heading for sweeps, we got good series. Minnesota showed heart. New York showed heart. And here we are. We got two series at 2-1. And if you're in Minnesota's case, you're at home looking to even it up and send all the pressure on Oklahoma City back home. So it's heating up. I'm heating up the end. Usually the NHL postseason is more dramatic and it goes more 7 games. We know what happens in the NBA. We know who makes the finals. This year it's been completely different. we look like we're going to get Florida and Edmonton again. And then the NBA, it's just wild. You have Indiana and the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Final. You have the Timberwolves again. The Timberwolves again in a conference final. And then Oklahoma City was the best team all year. But Cleveland were the best team in the East. Boston were defending champions. They're both out in the second round. And then we get maybe a classic series here between the Pacers and the Knicks. Last year's was amazing. And if the Knicks get one on what I guess would be tomorrow on Tuesday, we're going to have a hell of a series and the Garden's going to be rocking for Game 5. So the NBA, credit them. It's been like, and again, is it ideal for the NBA out west having Oklahoma City and Minnesota? No. But having the New York Knicks in a conference final, they could not have dreamed for anything different. Maybe if it was Boston, New York in the Eastern Conference final. Nothing against Indiana, but it's not the biggest market. I know they love basketball. But if you're the, if you're Adam Silver, you want Lakers, Bulls, Knicks, Just the big, big market teams. Golden State, that's who you want in the conference finals. Now, they didn't get it out west. Not going to lie, they didn't get it out west. But having the Knicks, who haven't been good since the 90s and haven't won a title since the early 70s with Willis Reed and Walt Frazier, Dave DeBuscher, like that's the era of Knicks basketball we're talking about now. That's the last time they won. In the early 70s. And they still go crazy for the Knicks. And how bad it was a few years ago. Remember, though, they'd lost out on the on the Zion Williams sweepstakes. Of the Porzingis situation was a disaster. That was a few years ago. And they hit on Jalen Brunson. They signed him. People were like, oh, it might have been an overpay for a guy who was, what, the second, third best player on Dallas? He has blossomed into one of the 10 best players in the NBA. And then a very smart move to go get OG Anunoby in that trade with the Raptors last year. Gave him defense and defending, despite him being injured sometimes. But that was a nice piece. And then they broke up the Villanova group. They trade DiVincenzo. They get rid of Randall to go get Karl Anthony Towns. To give Brunson another all-star. And they went, did they give up too much for Bridges? Probably. That was ridiculous. Four first-round picks and all that stuff. But he was big in that Boston series, and he showed up yesterday as well. So they got they have two bona fide all-stars. And if you want to say Bridges is like a top 50 player in the league, He has the potential to be an all-star, but he's a good third option. And now the Knicks are right there. But Indiana, they would have taken 2-1 heading into game 4 at home all day long at the start of the series. So they're in the driver's seat still. And they have the mental advantage over the Knicks as well because they took them out in 7 games last year. So we got two good conference finals, and from two series I thought would be over in 4, we've got two good series. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk a bit about Major League Baseball. The French Open's in full swing. We had some Canadians in action over in Paris with some wins with Diallo and Shapovalov. We'll get into that. And, of course, we have to talk about the Caitlin Clark injury that could impact the Indiana Fever. We will get into that over the next half hour here on the Tommy John Show, where we'll be back right after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Listen to Madonna Talk on CJLO 1690 AM, Saturdays 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., hosted by Kamala Madantakwright, an introduction to revolutionary reggae consciousness and the Caribbean indigenous community. Maroons, Caramanti, Kumina, Caribs, Taino, and Rastafarian culture, issues affecting the BIPOC community.
Here on Tommy John Show. So yeah, the French Open is underway, and we already have some surprises. Taylor Fritz, the 4 seed on the men's side, he loses in 4 sets to Daniel Altmaier. Man, that's a surprise. He has not played too well as of late. Maybe it's the surface. He's a big power hitter, loves to hit big serves on the clay. It doesn't really translate, but that's a surprising outcome there in the first round at the French Open. We mentioned the Canadians. We had two big results from Canadians today on the men's side. Gabriel Diallo with a straight sets win over the 18 seed from Argentina, Francisco Sorrentino. That's a big upset, but that's a big win for Diallo as he moves on to the second round of the French Open. Denis Shapovalov looked incredible today in his straight sets win over Pedro Martinez. He took that one 6-2, 6-love, 6-3. And he was really serving well. He had 8 aces. Still has a double fault issue, had 7 double faults. But still, if you're a Denis Shapovalov fan, that is encouraging. He's shown flashes of brilliance this year. Won in Dallas, made a semifinal in Mexico. The game's there. The game is really there. He's just got to put everything together. But that's a good start for him at the French Open. Holger Rune, the 10 seed from Denmark. He wins in 4 sets. The defending champion and 2 seed Carlos Alcaraz. Straight sets victory for him. 6-3, 6-4, 6-2 over Zipieri from Italy. And the other big one, I guess, would be Casper Ruud. He won in straight sets, 6-3, 6-4, 6-2. He's playing nice tennis as well. He's into the second round. The Yannick Sinner, the number one seed, he's in action in about 45 minutes' time at 2:15 p.m. as he takes on the Frenchman Arthur Rendouquec. And that should be a good match as well. So Sinner back in action tonight. Later in the week, who we got? We got Novak Djokovic tomorrow at around 8 a.m., the number 6 seed. He's coming off a win, his 100th career win in Switzerland. He will be taking on the American Mackenzie McDonald around 8 a.m. And Canadian Felix Auger-Aliassime, he's the 29 seed in this year's French Open. He will play Matteo Arnaldi, the Italian, at around 9 a.m. tomorrow. So the Canadians are in action. Should be fun to watch. We head to the women's side, and it wasn't a good performance at all by any means. For the number 9 seed, Emma Navarro, who's really been struggling. She had a great breakout year last year. She lost to the Spaniard Jessica Buzes Manero, 6-love, 6-1. 6-love, 6-1. Like, that is a real score. I'm not lying. That is a real score. She got dismantled, and she's a top 10 player in the world. So that is a crazy, crazy scoreline to see if you're a top 10 player. The defending champion, Iga Swiatek, 6-3, 6-3. She got her tournament off and running on the right foot. Other big scorelines to hear from yesterday, unfortunately, the Canadian Leila and Fernandez losing 6-3, 6-1 in the first round. Not a good performance from her. The Italian, Jessica Pellini, Jasmine Pellini, the number 4 seed, winning in 3 sets, 6-1, 4-6, 6-3. And we have to talk about this Canadian as well, Victoria Mimbuco. She's on to the second round of the French Open. She beat the Australian Lulu Soon 6-1, 7-6, that second set in a tiebreak. And it's heating up on the women's side as well. And big matches to look forward to tomorrow and the rest of the day. Coco Gauff will play tomorrow around 7 o'clock in the morning. She's the 2 seed. Same goes for Jessica Pegula around 7:45, 8 a.m. The number 3 seed will be taking on Anca Todoni from Romania. So on the women's side, you got to think Iga on this surface is going to be the favorite. She's won here, I don't know how many times, I think 4 times. So this is clearly her surface, but Sabalenka's been playing well. Anisimova's been playing well. There's a lot of good women tennis players heating up at the right time. And on the men, I hate to say it, Alcaraz has looked phenomenal when healthy on the red clay. What he did to Sinner in Rome was startling. He took it to him, won that tiebreak, and then just destroyed him in that second set. And Sinner looked for, heading into that final, I thought he was the player to beat. What he did to Casper Ruud, what he was doing that entire week in Rome, I thought he was going to run away with that title, but Carlos Alcaraz seems to just have his number. So those are the two heavy favorites on the men's side. And if you're a Novak Djokovic fan, that's got to be good seeing him coming off a win. His first title since the Olympics last summer. So a lot of good tennis coming up in the next week. We'll talk about that next week as well, as that will be into the second week of the French Open. So that will be round of 16, quarterfinals. Be looking forward to that. Quickly to the PGA Tour, and we had a, I don't want to say new winner because he's won a team event, but Benjamin Griffin winning at Colonial Country Club in Dallas, Texas. His first stroke play individual victory of his career, and he shot one over yesterday. It didn't matter. No one really made a push. Notable names, Tommy Fleetwood finished tied for fourth at 8 under par. Scottie Scheffler finished at 8 under par, tied for fourth. J.J. Spahn, who's having a nice year, he had another top 10 finish. But yeah, we head to the Memorial Tournament next week, elevated event. Rory not playing. He will be making his next start up here in Canada at the Canadian Open at at TPC Toronto, which should be a fun, fun tournament. That's his next start. He's pulling out of the Memorial Tournament. Not sure why. But still going to be a loaded field, absolutely loaded field. And it's one of the great golf courses on the PGA Tour, Muirfield Village in Dublin, Ohio. Quickly about Caitlin Clark. She's out at least 2 weeks with a quad strain, the Indiana Fever superstar. She's going to be out 2 weeks. She was off to a good start to the year. 19 points, almost 10 assists, 6 rebounds, 2 steals. But if they're the Indiana Fever, if you're the WNBA, you want her back as fast as possible because she is a ratings superstar, and every game that she plays in, she sells out. It's remarkable. Remarkable. Quickly to to Major League Baseball, and I don't know what the hell's happening in the American League East, but it's going up, round all over the place. So it's the Yankees still running the show, and then it's the Tampa Bay Rays, who are 7-3 in their last 10. They're making a big push. They really took it to the Blue Jays over the weekend. And if you're a Blue Jays fan, you don't know what to think. You sweep the Padres, who are one of the best teams in baseball. You see the Rays on your schedule. You start to perk up a bit. You're like, oh boy, here we go. And then you put in that performance over the weekend, and that was shocking. But now the Rays have won 5 in a row. They're at 500. 26-26, their second place in the American League East. That drops the Red Sox to third, who just had a weird weekend. Would win a game against the Orioles and then lose 2 in a row. Win a game and then lose 2 in a row. It's 1 step forward, 2 steps back with the Red Sox. They did not look good the last 2 games of that series against Baltimore. And this is not the Orioles team of last year. They can't pitch. They can't really do anything. That's a bad two losses for the Red Sox. So they fall back into third place. The Blue Jays, like we mentioned, after such a good series against the Padres, get swept by Tampa Bay. And they got a big series coming up. They really got to make some ground. And they're in Dallas to take on the Texas Rangers tonight. Yes, tonight, Monday. They got a three-game set with the Texas Rangers. The Detroit Tigers continue to play phenomenal baseball. They lead the way at 34-20 in the American League Central. They got a four-game lead over the Guardians and Twins. The American League West, it is still the Seattle Mariners leading the way. They have a one-and-a-half-game lead over the Houston Astros, who have won two in a row and are starting to move back into it. Head to the National League, and the Mets, who once had a lead, are now two games back of the Phillies. The Phillies are 9-1. 9-1 in their last 10. Heating up the hottest team in baseball. They have overtaken the New York Mets, who have won two in a row, but that series in Boston didn't do them any favors. They all got off to a good start. They're playing 600 baseball. No need to panic, but seeing the Phillies rattle off 9 out of 10, it's got to be a little bit concerning. But still, the Mets, 32-21, 600 baseball, you'll take that all the time. The Atlanta Braves, considering where they were at the start of the year, they've really made a push. They're only 8.5 back of the Phillies. But them being only two games under 500 when they started 0-8, 1-9 is crazy. So they've played much better as of late. Heads of the National League Central, it is still the Chicago Cubs with a two-game lead over the St. Louis Cardinals. They're playing some good baseball as well. The Cardinals have won three in a row, though, so look out. And head over to the National League West. It is still the Dodgers leading the way with 32 wins, 21 losses, 604 baseball. They have lost two in a row, which is unusual for a Dodgers team. Then you got the Giants, who are a game back at 31-22. The Padres, just two games back of them. And the Arizona Diamondbacks, right around 500 at 26-27, are six games back. Do we even mention the Colorado Rockies? I don't even think we should. All right, I already did. They're 9-44. 9-44. I can't even believe that's a real stat. They are 9-44. Crazy. So the big news that happened since our show, and we haven't talked about the NFL in a while, but I just quickly wanted to get into it. Brock Purdy signed his big deal, and people are freaking out about it. How can Brock Purdy get this money? Oh my God, he's a seventh-round pick. He was just in a good situation. All that's fair. I'm not saying Brock Purdy's Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, though he is not. But for him, he signs the five-year, $265 million deal. $53 million a year. And yes, is it a bit rich for me? Of course. But Brock Purdy has led them to a Super Bowl. Brock Purdy did lead them in his first year to an NFC Championship game, and then he got hurt, so couldn't really play. And yes, injuries can be a concern, and he's not the biggest guy in the world. But still, I really think San Francisco had to do it. Now, could they have waited a year? Could have put him on a tag? Could have waited, kicked the can down the road? Sure. But if you hear the way Kyle Shanahan talks about Brock Purdy, and you hear the way that all these guys in the 49ers organization talk about Brock Purdy, John Lynch, all the players, the front office, they love Brock Purdy. So this deal was always going to get done. But him at $53 million a year, hey, Dak's making 60. Other people are making 58, 57, 55. He didn't reset the market, which some people thought he would. He took a friendlier deal. They were able to get Fred Warner's deal done. They signed Kittle this offseason. Now, the big, big, big stinking contracts that Brandon Ayuk won, they signed that. That was a terrible contract. Especially, you could have gotten a second, maybe a first-round pick for him last year and would have gotten his money off the books. He tears his ACL, wasn't really producing anyway, and now no one really wants him. So that's a bad contract to give. So there's nothing you can do about that. But considering what other quarterbacks are making and who have accomplished a lot less than Brock Purdy, it's not a terrible deal. It's not. And I know he doesn't have the biggest arm in the world, and he's not the clutchest guy by any means. He is produced for them. And Kyle Shanahan loves him, and John Lynch love him. And as long as they're in San Francisco, Brock Purdy's going to be the guy. They have signed up for Brock Purdy. He's kind of like the NFC Tua, if you think about it. If you think about him and Tua, they put up good numbers in the regular season, don't have the strongest arms, have good offensive-minded head coaches, have a lot of good weapons around them, put up good numbers, have injury concerns. And then once you get to the postseason, you're like, oh, is it going to happen? But Brock Purdy's had miles better playoff success than Tua. Like, not even remotely close. We all remember Tua in that frozen tundra game against Kansas City a few years ago, or 2 years ago. We all remember that game. We have seen Brock Purdy lead the 49ers to the Super Bowl, and maybe his two most impressive performances were the NFC Championship game against Detroit. He really played well in the second half. And then that game against Green Bay, where Green Bay, I think, let that game slip. Those last few drives, Brock Purdy was huge for the 49ers. He led them to overtime of the Super Bowl, so clearly he can get you there. It's just, he's not a flashy thing, and Tua's not flashy. And do I think Brock Purdy's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL? Probably not, but he's a top 12 guy, top 14 guy in the league, and that's where he's getting paid right now. Trevor Lawrence gets paid more than him. Joe Burrow gets paid more than him. Dak Prescott, Josh Allen, all these guys get paid more than him, rightfully so. But did not reset the market. He got paid to roughly where he is. He's in the Jared Goff level and none of those guys, which is fine. If considering what he's done and how much Kyle Shanahan loves Brock Purdy, it's not a crazy contract. It's not. I thought he was going to get over $60 million a year. No, $53 million, which is a lot. And remember when Mahomes signed his huge deal, $450 million? That looked like it was a steal 2 years after he signed it. They've redone it to make him get paid more, fair enough. But like those deals now are just resetting the market. And then the Deshaun Watson one, which we haven't really gotten to that point, where $230 million guaranteed is like the standard. Still over $200 million guaranteed, but Deshaun Watson got every single cent of that contract guaranteed, which is just shows how crazy the Cleveland Browns are. Crazy. But all in all, Brock Purdy getting that money, he's very similar to Tua to me, and Tua got a big contract as well. Not saying that was a bad contract, but franchise quarterbacks do not grow on trees. Ask Cleveland. Ask the Tennessee Titans before they took Cam Ward. We haven't even played a game yet. But ask those teams that have never really had a franchise quarterback. Ask the Denver Broncos pre-Bo Nix. Like, people act like, oh, just because Kyle Shanahan's there, they can put any quarterback in a system. That's not true. That's not true. Brock Purdy was better than Jimmy Garoppolo. Trey Lance was the third overall pick in the draft. He couldn't do what Brock Purdy was doing. So Brock Purdy can play. And for a guy who was an second-team All-Pro, was he? He was in the MVP conversation 2 years ago. Led him to a Super Bowl. The year before that, led him to an NFC Championship game. Really? He doesn't deserve to get a nice contract? Now, he's not an elite-level guy. If you think about it, Burrow, Lamar, Josh Allen, Mahomes, those guys are on a different level. I understand that. But to say he's not better than Dak Prescott, to say he's not better than Jared Goff, to say he's not better than those other guys, like, you can make arguments for all those guys over Purdy, but he's in that category. He's in that class. And that's the going rate. It's the National Football League. You know, like, players get paid well, and quarterbacks who have done stuff get paid well. Tua, God bless him. He's been like a 2-3-time Pro Bowler. In the regular season, he puts up good numbers. The Miami had to pay him. They did. Who are they going to find another Tua right down the road? Tua is an above-average NFL quarterback. Brock Purdy is an above average, borderline top 10 quarterback. If that was the case, if they're so easy to come by, then everyone would have one and there was no need to draft new quarterbacks. Think about some of the teams and their quarterback situation. Look at the Giants. Are you serious? Look at the Saints. The Colts. The Jets. The Browns. Look at all these teams and their quarterback issues. They would kill to have Brock Purdy. They would kill to have Tua. Just some sort of stability at that position. So I understand you think Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, not the strongest arm. He produces on the field. And I don't fault San Francisco just wanting security of some sort at that position for the next 5 years. And he didn't reset the market. He got paid roughly where he is, 8th to 12th best quarterback in the NFL. And that's it. They got the deal done. And what a story for Brock Purdy. Mr. Irrelevant, making a couple hundred thousand dollars a year to now getting a $265 million contract. That's a great story. But again, ask those teams at the bottom of the AFC, the bottom of the NFC, who have absolutely no one at quarterback, if they would trade for Brock Purdy. If they would pay Brock Purdy that money just to have stability, I bet they would. You tell me Shane Steichen would rather Brock Purdy than Anthony Richardson, Daniel Jones? You tell me Aaron Glenn wouldn't rather have Brock Purdy than Justin Fields? Are you telling me right now, with a straight face, Kellen Moore and the Saints would rather have Tyler Shaik and Desmond, the kid from South Carolina, Spencer Rattler? You'd rather have those guys than Brock Purdy? Go around the league. Brock Purdy's been to a Super Bowl. Been to another, and he's been to two NFC championship games. He's a good quarterback. And that's what good quarterbacks go for. So that's just my quick thought on Brock Purdy. I know it's a lot of money, but San Francisco now have stability at quarterback for years to come. And that's a fact. Tommy, $53 million a year? That's the going rate. $53 million a year. And it's going to go over that. What do you think Lamar Jackson's going to get on his next contract? Josh Allen just signed his. Joe Burrow just signed his. But wait till the next great quarterback comes up. Wait till Jaden Daniels gets to sign in a few years. What if Caleb Williams or Drake May hit and they're Pro Bowl caliber quarterbacks? What do you think they're going to sign for? This Brock Purdy contract's going to be laughable. $53 million a year. It's around 9th, 10th in the NFL. And that's honestly where he is as a quarterback. Don't hate the deal. When we come back after this quick break, we'll preview game 4. Of Florida and Carolina and Edmonton and Dallas. Plus, I'll give you some sneaky picks who I like for the NFL season coming up. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. We're back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Passionate about issues related to intimate partner violence? Join Women Aware's annual general meeting June 8th, 2025. To learn more about how our survivor-led nonprofit has been working hard this year to address these topics from an intersectional lens. From providing tailored trainings to community-based events, we are eager to share with you the projects our community spearheaded and led this past year. A Zoom link is provided, and to join our AGM, simply sign up via our social media at womenaware.mtl or check out our website, www.womenaware.ca. Women Aware, by survivors, for survivors.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
All right, gang, let's really nail it this time. Here we go.
And have the iconic sounds of cinema? Bum.
Well, tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday from 8 to 9 a.m.
Only on CJLO 1690 a.m. in Montreal with your hosts Remy
and Danny.
This is how we do it. Hey, I never asked you.
Yeah.
You like guacamole? Ah! Run! Oh, God! Run!
This can't be who I think it is it? My eyes must be playing damn tricks. Came a long way from a bag of riddance. Last time
back here on the Tommy John Show. So yeah, we have game four tonight between Carolina and Florida. And I'm sorry, Carolina fans. I've been mean on the program today. I'm picking Florida. It's not even a debate. They hung with them in game three. And then, I don't know what the hell happened that third period. Just the floodgates opened and Florida took over. So I'm taking Florida tonight. And I like Edmonton on Tuesday. I think they're going to play well. It's a bit deflating for Dallas. Even though they're not out of this series by any means, it's deflating. They totally outplayed them in that second period. And then McDavid to score with under 30 seconds left, I think it was, to go up by two goals going to the third period. That was just backbreaking. And I think Edmonton's going to have, they have the home crowd, they have the momentum, they've won two in a row. I'm going to take Edmonton to go up 3-1 back to Dallas, and then we'll go from there. So there's my quick thoughts on the two game fours coming up. So the NFL over-under win totals are out, where it's post-free agency, it's post-the-draft, it's post-rookie mini-camp. Teams are starting to get back together for practices, just before it really hits the offseason. And just quickly through the highest over-under. So over-under 11.5. So teams, that's the line they set Vegas. So the teams that Vegas has at 11.5 over-unders. No surprise, Philadelphia, Kansas City, Buffalo, Baltimore. And you can easily make a case that those are the four best teams in football. Yeah, the two teams that are in the Super Bowl last year, Baltimore, who everyone loves, and are one of the great regular season teams of all time, and Buffalo. Then at 10.5, where it gets interesting, is the Detroit Lions and the San Francisco 49ers. And you might be freaking out here about San Francisco. If you've seen the 49ers schedule, it's really one of the most cakewalk schedules of all time. It really is that easy. I was stunned to see how easy that schedule is. And if the 49ers don't make the playoffs this year, it's concerning. They have, obviously, Seattle. Then they have the Saints, the Cardinals, the Jaguars, the Bucks, the Falcons, the Giants, the Browns, the Panthers, the Titans, the Colts, Bears. It's literally one of the easiest schedules. And I think it is the easiest schedule in the National Football League. So that's why they're at 10.5. Do I think they're one of the six best teams in the league? No. I think they've lost some pieces and stuff. I think they're a top 10 team in the league. But them being at the 10.5 over-under mark is strictly because of that schedule. That schedule is brutal. Brutal. At 9.5, it gets interesting. You got a bigger group here. You got Cincinnati, Denver, Green Bay, Houston, the Chargers, Rams, Bucks, and the Commanders. Those are your 9.5. If you ask me, I haven't really focused on Denver's schedule, but I know that division is very tough. You have Kansas City. The Raiders added Pete Carroll, Geno Smith, Aston Jente. They're going to be a bit better. The Chargers are only going to go up. They had a good offseason, great draft. It's a tough division. So but having two teams there at 9.5 is pretty crazy. And then here's one I love. I like the Minnesota Vikings. They're only at 8.5. They won 14 games last year. And I know people like to come at Sam Darnold. Oh, my God, Sam Darnold. Not that good. Oh, my God. Then he has the good year. And now it's J.J. McCarthy, who was a top 10 pick a year ago. And they think, oh, well, Sam Darnold was great. No, no, no. Kevin O'Connell's a great coach. That's what it is. And that you can say whatever you want about the Minnesota Vikings. The regular season-wise, they win football games. And if Kevin O'Connell's there, I love what they did in free agency. They invested in that offensive line, invested on the back end of that defense. I'm not the biggest J.J. McCarthy guy. I wasn't in college. But with that amount of talent around him, with that coaching staff, 8.5, I'll take the over there. Steelers are 8.5, like I mentioned, along with the Cardinals, Bears, Dolphins. 7.5 is where it gets interesting. Seattle, Jacksonville, Indianapolis, Dallas, Atlanta, and New England. And yes, New England, I can't believe it, as a Patriots fan, we're the new sexy pick now. Everyone loves the Patriots. And honestly, they had a hell of an offseason. I'm not trying to be biased. You bring in Mike Vrabel, who's known and respected as a top 10 coach in the league.